Woman in Black, from the novel by Susan Hill. Adapted for radio by John Strickland. Episode 4, Letters and Death Certificates.
Kipps! Mr. Kipps!
No! No!
Arthur! Mr. Kipps!
No!
Arthur, it's all right. It's all right. It's me, Sam Daly. What the hell are you doing out here, man? You'll catch your death.
Mr. Daly? Oh, God, I thought
you... All right. Don't waste your breath trying to talk. Let's get you out of here. Come on.
She was at the window. She was watching me. I saw her. She was watching me drown. Someone whistled. Spider ran. I tried to call her, but she wouldn't come back. Spider!
She's here. Spider. It's all right. She'll do, won't you, girl? Now, come on. You able to walk?
Yeah. There's a door. It's upstairs. It wouldn't open. I was going to use the axe and break it down, but it swung open before I...
Did it. Now, that's it. Come on. Easy now.
It was a chair. It was a rocking chair, but no one was there. And someone whistled. And I came out, and a spider ran.
Yeah, she's a good runner. Now, come on, let's get you inside, in the warm.
But the trap. That pony and trap.
Out the front.
But...
Oh, I still like to make use of it now and again. It's a pleasant way to travel, and it's a sight safer than a motor car across that causeway. What did you think?
I'd heard others. Another.
Oh, aye. Keckwick, perhaps.
No, not Keckwick.
Well, you were told to take care. Now then, set yourself closer to the fire. Warm up a bit.
No, I'm better. I'm all right now. It was... I could use a drink.
Oh, I can't help you there. Here, have a swig of that.
Oh, thank you. Oh, that's good.
I wouldn't come out on a night like this without a flask.
Why did you come out, Mr. Daly?
I had you on me mind. I weren't happy. It began to unsettle me.
But it's quite early in the morning, isn't it? I've become so confused.
Middle of the night. I kept waking. Like I say, I had you on me mind. And it's a good job I came when I did.
Yes, I'm very grateful. I can't actually remember. I can't even remember how I got in here.
I carried you in, Arthur. You were pretty far gone out there.
Well, I am extremely glad to see you, Mr. Daly.
Aye, you've good reason. People have drowned on that marsh before now.
Yes. Yes, I know that now. I was being pulled under, and the dog with me. And she was watching it all.
Anyway, there. Now you've come to a bit more, you best get whatever you need and we'll be off.
Off?
Aye. I came to see how you were faring in this godforsaken place. Well, I have seen. Now, you better come back home with me and recover yourself.
For my work.
And what have you found here, Mr. Kipps? A map to buried treasure?
No. A great quantity of rubbish, Mr. Daly, and precious little else. But the job will have to be done at some time or other. I am obliged to do it.
Sometime, Arthur. Not now.
No, you're right. There are some letters... papers here I want to take with me. And I have to go upstairs.
Upstairs? Why?
I need to see something.
I'll come with you.
No. I must do it on my own.
You won't learn, will you, Arthur?
Please. I have to.
Go on, then. I'll wait for you here. Just shout if
there's
any...
I won't be long.
The room that had been so ordered only hours before now lay in a state of total disarray. Sheets and blankets had been pulled from the bed and lay trailed across the floor. The wardrobe door and the drawers of the small chest had been thrown open, the clothes dragged out and left hanging like entrails from a wounded body. The lead soldiers had been knocked down like ninepins. Books lay open, their jackets torn. Soft toys were split and unclothed. The bedside table was overturned. And the rocking chair had been pushed into the centre to stand like a great brooding bird over the wreckage. And somewhere beneath it all, the music box played.
Mr. Daly, I'm ready when you are.
As we crossed the Nine Lives Causeway for what I fervently prayed was the last time, the tide was dropping back steadily. The sky was a uniform pearly grey, the air moist and cold and still. The marshes lay dull and misty all about us, and ahead the flat countryside stood dripping and colourless. At Mr. Daly's, a room had been prepared for me, and I was left alone to sleep fitfully through the morning, my mind in a fever of confusion. I awoke at one, little refreshed, but forced myself to take a hot bath and eat a light lunch, and then passed the afternoon in the peace and tranquillity of my room, rereading Janet's letters that I'd brought with me from the island. Slowly piecing together the tragic story that seemed to be centred still at Eelmarsh House. In the same bundle with the letters were three death certificates.
Nathaniel Drablow, aged 6 years. Cause of death, drowning. Rose Judd, nursemaid. Cause of death, drowning.
The third certificate was dated some 12 years later.
Janet Eliza Humphrey, spinster, age 36. Cause of death, heart failure. Come in.
It's only me, Arthur. Come to see how you look. Will you live, do you think?
Oh, yes, I'm sure I shall. I feel a good deal better already. Thank you for last night.
Aye. You've come a long way since the night I met you on the late train.
Feels like 100 years.
Aye, you've gone through some rough seas.
Well, I'm in the calm now, and there's an end of it.
That's to be hoped, for sure.
Surely you don't think any more harm can come of it? I never intend to go back there. Nothing would persuade me.
No? That's good.
So all is well. Though I do wonder what will happen to the house. I can't imagine anyone wanting to live there. Do you suppose that poor old Mrs. Drabler was haunted by...
A sister.
Sister? The woman in black?
Janet Humphrey. She was a sister. Alice Drablow's. Or Alice Humphrey, as she was before she wed Morgan Drablow.
And did she, too, have to endure those dreadful noises out there night and day? I wonder how she did it without going out of her mind.
Perhaps she didn't.
Was there something I still did not see, Mr. Daly? If I had stayed there any longer, would I have encountered yet more horrors?
That I can't tell.
But you could tell me something. Come on, we're a good way from the place, and my nerves are quite steady again. I must know. It can't hurt me now.
Not you, Arthur. No, not you, maybe.
For God's sake, what is it you're holding back? What are you so afraid to tell me?
You, Arthur. You'll be away from here in a day or so. If you're lucky, you'll neither see nor hear nor know of anything to do with that damn place again. The rest of us have to stay. We've to live with it.
With what? Stories? Rumours? With the sight of that woman in black from time to time? With what?
With... whatever will surely follow some time or other. Crithin Gifford has lived with that for 50 years. It's changed people. They don't speak of it. You found that out. And those who suffered worst say least. Jerome. Keckwick.
How do you mean, suffered?
Very well. If you must be told, then you must. Janet Humphrey never married. She gave up her child, the boy, to her sister and her husband, Alice and Morgan Drablow, because she'd no choice. At first she stayed away, hundreds of miles away, in Scotland. And the boy was raised as a Drablow,
never intended to know different. But in the end, the pain of being parted from him, instead of easing, grew worse for Janet. And so she returned to Crithin. She wasn't welcome at her parents' house, and the boy's father had gone abroad, so she took rooms in the town. Are you sure you want to hear this?
Go on, please.
Well, at first Alice Drablow wouldn't let her see the boy at all. But Janet was so distressed she threatened violence. And in the end the sister relented, just so far. Janet could visit very occasionally, but never see the boy alone and never disclose to him who she was. No one ever foresaw that he'd turn out to look so like her, or that the natural affinity between them would grow out. The little boy became more and more attached to her, and as he did so, he began to be colder towards Alice Drablow. Janet planned to take him away, but before she could do so, the accident happened, just as you heard. The boy, the nursemaid Rose Judd, the pony trap and its driver, Keckwick.
Keckwick?
Keckwick's father. And there was the boy's little dog, too.
My God.
Well, that's a treacherous place. You found that out. That sea fret sweeps across the marshes. The quicksands are hidden.
So they all drowned?
Aye. And Janet Humphrey watched.
What?
She was back at the house, watching from the nursery window, waiting for them to return.
Poor woman.
The bodies were recovered. Though they left the pony trap, that were held too fast by the mud. And from that day on, Janet Humphrey began to go mad.
Was there any wonder?
No. Mad with grief, and mad with anger, and a desire for revenge.
Revenge?
Aye. Well, she blamed her sister for letting them go out, though it was no one's fault. That mist comes down without warning.
Out of a clear sky.
Now, whether because of her loss or a madness or what, Janet also contracted a disease, which caused her to begin to waste away. The flesh shrank from her bones. The colour was drained from her. She looked like a walking skeleton. When she went about the streets, people drew back. Everyone was terrified of her. And eventually, she died. She died in hatred and misery. And as soon as ever she died, the hauntings began. And so they've gone on.
What, all the time? Ever since?
No. Less these past few years. But she's still seen, and the noises heard, by folk chancing to be out on the marsh.
And presumably by old Mrs. Drablow.
Who knows?
But Mrs. Drablow is dead now. There, surely, the whole matter will rest.
Whenever she's been seen, in the graveyard, on the marsh, in the streets of the town, however briefly and whoever by, there's been one sure and certain result.
Yes?
In some violent circumstance, a child has died.
What? You mean by some accident?
Oh, generally an accident. Once or twice it's been after an illness that struck them down within a day or night, or less.
You mean a child of the town?
Any child. Jerome's child.
Mr. Jerome. Which would explain his behaviour in the churchyard. But surely children sometimes do die.
They do, Mr. Kipps. They do.
And is there anything more than chance to connect these deaths with the appearance of that woman?
Chance? Oh, you may find it hard to believe, Arthur. You may doubt it.
Well, no,
We know.
I do not doubt, Mr. Daly. If you would excuse me, I think I should like to rest now.
And so you should, Arthur. I'll leave you. You'll need your strength for your journey home tomorrow. Though you know you're welcome to stop here for as long as you like.
That's most kind. But I've a deep longing for London. Strange though it may seem to you. And Stella is waiting for me there.
Well, you know your own mind. But for now, I should try and get some sleep. Come on down when you feel like some supper.
Oh, dearest Stella, why did I ever come up here? How I miss you.
I slept long but wretchedly. I slept, but woke every hour from turbulent nightmares, my body bathed in sweat. I slept, but the woman in black was sitting on the end of the bed, pushing her face suddenly down close to mine, so that I sat up and cried out in terror. I slept, and my head rang with the sound of the child crying out on the marsh, the rocking chair crashing to and fro, the splintering of the pony trap as it was sucked into the quicksand. And all the time, held up before my mind's eye, were those letters and the death certificates, every word of which I feverishly repeated over and over and over.
Rose Judd, nursemaid.
6 years.
Cause of death.
Drowning.
Drowning.
Rose Judd.
Janet. Eliza. Humphrey.
Drowning.
Spinster.
Janet. Eliza. Humphrey.
Age 36.
Age 36.
Cause of death.
Cause of death. Heart failure.
Heart failure.
I slept. And when I woke, the fever and delirium finally gone, I was utterly exhausted, drained. But I was well. There was nothing else the woman could do to me. I had endured and survived.
Arthur? Arthur, you're awake.
Stella? Stella! Where am I? How did I get home?
Arthur, you're still at Mr. Daly's. You've been very ill, my darling. I've been so worried. We all were.
But I was just talking to Mr. Daly. I'm travelling back today to see you.
The doctor has called every day. You've had the most terrible fever. Mr. Daly sent word to the office, and as soon as Mr. Bentley told me, I took the train up to be with you. Oh, Arthur, whatever has happened to you here?
How long have I been ill, Stella?
12 days or more. Oh, Arthur, I feared I might lose you.
Oh, no chance of that, I'm afraid. I come from good yeoman stock.
I couldn't stand to live without you, Arthur.
Shush, you won't have to. I'm better now. Look at me. All danger is past.
Yes. Yes, I believe it is, and whatever it was that did this to you, I shall not allow it to happen again. As soon as you're a little stronger, we shall travel back to London together. We shall be married as we planned, and I shall never let you out of my sight again, Arthur Kipps.
Oh, I think Mr. Bentley might have something to say about that.
Mr. Bentley and I are agreed. He bitterly regrets having sent you to this place. He asks you to forgive him.
Well, I do. I'm quite certain he wasn't to know. And anyway, I'm not sure I do regret having come here altogether. The experience has changed me, Stella. I have seen and heard terrible things here, I cannot deny that. And yet, I know, too, something of the pain and suffering that lay behind it all. I can't explain it, but somehow I feel I do understand. Out there, in the middle of it all, I became another person. Or at the very least, experienced emotions that belong to another. Can you understand at all, Stella?
I'm not sure, Arthur. I don't know what went on out there, but I will try, believe me.
Oh, I was so young, so arrogant when I arrived here from London. And I've been taught a lesson. A hard lesson, perhaps, but one I was sore in need of learning. And then, too, I have been the recipient of so much kindness, Stella, from people who barely knew me. Keckwick, the landlord and his wife, Mr. and Mrs. Daly. I fear I shall not be able to repay half my debts.
Oh, there will be time for all that when you are quite well again, my dearest. The doctor says that if we take great care, you may be fit enough to travel tomorrow. But that when we reach London, you must still rest and build up your strength.
Forgive the intrusion, but we could hear you talking up here, so we knew you were awake. I've been sent up to see if you're well enough to take a little food.
I'm a good deal recovered, Mr. Daly, thank you. We are hoping to travel back to London tomorrow. I've imposed on your hospitality more than enough.
Don't be foolish, man. It was the very least we could do.
I'll go and find Mrs. Daly. She'll be wanting to tell cook numbers for dinner.
Spider's been looking for you.
How is she?
Oh, she's none the worse.
I shall miss her a great deal. I think we grew quite fond of each other. I was going to ask you if you might let me take her back with me. But I don't think she's a London dog.
I should hope she's not. But she'll be whelping some time or other. If you're serious, I'll keep one of the pups for you.
Well, it would certainly be a good reason for you to come and visit us.
Aye.
Well, no, not that you need a reason. You know that, I hope. I owe you my life, Mr. Daly. I shan't forget that.
I'm not a city man myself, but we usually visit once or twice a year. And we'll certainly make it our business to come and check up on you.
I must know, Mr. Daly.
No, what?
You told me that a child has always died in Crithin Gifford whenever the woman in black has been seen.
Aye.
I must know.
Nothing. Nothing has happened.
Oh, pray God it may not. Pray that the chain is broken, that her power is at an end, that I was the last ever to see her.
Aye. Pray God. She was a poor, troubled woman.
The following morning we left the house. There was a sadness at parting company with Mr. and Mrs. Daly, but in truth, nothing more. I did not wish to see the town again, did not want to risk meeting Mr. Jerome or Keckwick, and most of all, I didn't want to catch so much as a glimpse of the distant marsh. The doctor had told me to put the whole thing from my mind. And with Stella beside me, it already seemed as if it might all have happened to another person altogether. Little did I know that the worst was yet to come. Stella and I returned to London, and within 6 weeks we had married, quietly and without fuss. We were as happy as a young man and his bride could possibly be, content in each other's company, not rich, but not poor either. Busy and looking forward to the future. A little over a year later, Stella gave birth to our child, a son, whom we called Joseph Arthur Samuel. Mr. Daly was his godfather. Oh, I was so filled with joy and contentment in my life that I never so much as thought about the past. Yealmarsh House, the Drablow Estate, Jennet Humphrey, these were names that were never mentioned again. And I was in a particularly peaceful, happy frame of mind one Sunday afternoon in the summer of the year following Joseph's birth. We had gone to a large park, 10 miles or so outside London. There was a lake, a bandstand, stalls selling ices and fruits. Families strolled in the sunshine, children tumbled about upon the grass. There was a festive, holiday air about the place as Stella and I walked happily, with young Joseph taking a few unsteady steps, holding on to our hands while we watched him, as proud as any parents could be. One of the attractions on offer was a pony and trap, on which ride could be taken down an avenue of great horse chestnut trees. There was only room enough for 2 passengers, so Stella took Joseph, and I stood watching them bowl merrily away down the ride.
You hold on tight, Joseph. I'll wait for you here.
They went out of sight round a bend, and I began to look idly about me at the other enjoyers of the afternoon. And then, quite suddenly, I saw her, standing by one of the trees, Jennet Humphrey, the woman in black, with the wasted face.
Oh, my God.
Our eyes met, just as they had done in that old burial ground on the island. I felt once more her power, the malevolence, the hatred, the passionate bitterness. And, just as before, I could not take my eyes away from her. I knew that something terrible was about to happen and that there was nothing, nothing I could do to prevent it.
No!
She stepped out into the path of the pony.
No! No!
Our baby son, little Joseph Arthur, was thrown against a tree. He lay crumpled on the grass below it. Dead. And 10 long months later, Stella, too, died from her terrible injuries.
It's past 3 o'clock. What are you doing down here still?
I'd seen the ghost. And she had her revenge.
Arthur! What is it? What's wrong?
Oh, Esri, Esri. Oh. I'm so sorry. Forgive
me. Forgive you for what?
Oh, so many things. Things that made me what I am today, and an old man haunted by his past.
Stella.
Forgive me.
You've never spoken to me of her. In all these years, Arthur. Why? What happened to her?
I can't speak. I can't speak of her, Esri. Even now I can't speak. Which is why I've been writing it all down. It's all here for you to read after I'm dead.
Arthur, tonight, please.
Tonight, when the children were telling ghost stories and they asked me to tell one and I shouted at them to leave me alone, I...
about it already.
But they were right, Esme. I did have a story, a true story. And I knew that until I told it, not aloud by the fireside, not as an idle diversion, but until I exorcised it, I would have no rest from it. And that is what I've done tonight. I've set it all down on paper, every detail. At last. And if I weep now, Esme, they are tears of relief at having driven this ghost from within me after all these years.
Oh, Arthur. Arthur, there.
They were almost back. And we would have gone, Esme. We would have been safe. They were almost back. They'd almost reached me.
It's all right, Arthur. It's all over now. You're quite safe now.
I saw the ghost of Janet Humphrey. And she had her revenge. Stella! Joseph!
Final episode of The Woman in Black by Susan Hill, dramatized for radio by John Strickland. Old Kipps was played by John Woodvine, Young Kipps by Robert Glenister, Esme by Paula Tilbrook, Stella by Jane Cox, and Samuel Daly by Rod Arthur. Other parts were played by members of the cast. Technical presentation was by Peter Bellum, Steve Brook, and Maggie Richmond. The music was specially composed by Derek Pierce. The Woman in Black was directed in Manchester by Chris Wallace.